And they've been threatened with legal action by Sainsbury's, so they've changed their name to Morrisings instead. And as Adam just pointed out, the M for Morrisings is quite similar to, obviously, Morrison's. And it said that the owner was worried what was in store from... Oh, they're good at this, aren't they? What was in store from Morrison's.
Yeah.
He was expected another letter from a heavy-handed legal team, but Morrison's has told Sky News that they're happy to shelve the matter and endure a little friendly rivalry. Mr Nagret and his customers obviously have good taste, so we wish him well, a Morrison's spokesman said. And that, actually, to take it back to what you were talking about, Audrey, before, is that, to me, is like, it's about being sort of expansive and real people and everything else. You know, they know that he's not going to compete with them.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to get confused between a little convenience store and a big Morrison's store.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, they're getting good publicity from it by just being nice, friendly people.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really true. Yeah. And the opposite is true as well, isn't it? You know, big corporates get kicked in over stupid stuff. I had a mate, okay, called Mike. Yeah, and his name is Rose. Mike Rose. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he had a software company, just himself. And he called it Mike Rose Software. And Microsoft actually sent him a cease and desist letter and threatened him with legal action and took his own name away.
This actually happened in Birmingham. There was a restaurant that opened, a couple of guys had opened a brand new restaurant, done really, really well, and they actually ended up getting a Michelin star. When it was then registered about the Michelin star, their name was very similar to a famous hotel in New York, right. And they made them. They changed the name. And because they didn't want to battle with it, they had to completely change the name of the restaurant. But they just got a Michelin star, but both in their sort of late 20s, early 30s, really giving it a go to try and create this new restaurant. And it came crashing down on them.
Crazy stuff, isn't it? Crazy stuff.
I think, what's the point?
Yeah. Well, they'd obviously created this own brand
anyway,
with their actual work, so, you know.
Yeah. At least very Morrison's true. Didn't go off their trolley, eh?
Oh,
took me ages to think of that. Come on, come on, people, come on.
You've been saving that up.
I've had a few more tweets while we were listening to Steph in the newsroom. From Tenterton Twilight, Laura and the team over there at Tenterton Toilets. Looking forward to listening again and catching up later. FSB Andrew Knott. FSB Networking, our next Slope Off Friday networking lunch is 2 p.m. on the 7th of July at Ala Turca in Herne Bay. If you'd like to book on it, if you DM Andrew, you can book your place. And Andrew's Twitter handle is A-N-O-T-T-20. And I'll just warn you that Jules of this parish and Andrew, who conducts Slope Off Friday lunch, I might add, normally finishes round about 2 a.m. Yeah. Well, that's when I get the tweet from Jules that goes, I'm drunk.
I love you.
You're my best mate. Can you come and pick me up, please? That's what normally happens there. So I just thought I'd let you know. Okay.
So I've had a tweet from Neil De Silva, who was here last week, wasn't he? Because I wasn't on the show, but I saw him on the way in.
Yeah.
Saying, can we give him a shout out with his Twitter ID, which is iNutritionUK.
Yep. Hi, Neil. So, and also I've had a tweet from Bridger Howes, who said, we've been listening to Vanilla Web interviewing Love Selling One on a Business Bunker about eliminating closing from the sales. Very interesting. Mm. So good. Thank you, Rich. Thank you for tweeting in. Thank you, everybody, for tweeting. Do keep your tweets and emails and everything coming. We've got two fabulous guests we're going to talk to. We're going to do one more email, and then we're going to talk to our next guest.
So we've got the Medway Business Club networking event. The event is on the 30th of June, so that's this Friday, from 12 till 2 at the Priestfield Stadium in Redfern Avenue, Gillingham. And you can go to medwaybusinessclub.org to find out more.
Fantastic. It's now an absolute pleasure to welcome back, quite a long time, Mr. Adam Hutchison from Belmont Sandbanks. Adam, welcome back to the Business Bunker Show.
Thanks for having me, Paul. It's nice to be back in the new Spangley studio.
Yeah. Last time you were on, we were down in the deepest depths of Dimchurch, weren't we?
We were indeed, yeah. Which is quite easier for me to get to, but that's not a problem.
Yeah.
There's no pleasing these guests.
I know. I was okay. I was in Ashford, so it's not
We've got air conditioning, you know, there's lots of space and everything.
It's very nice. Very nice. I like it.
Alpaca free. No porcupines called Fred stealing the biscuits and all that kind of nonsense.
Nicely coloured microphone.
Yeah.
Very nice. Thanks for having me.
No, it's an absolute pleasure, Adam. And you're most welcome back. Let's start off by giving an overview, please, of what it is you do and your very substantial business, Belmont Sandbanks. I'm sure a lot of people know of you anyway, but let's just kind of start with that.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So I'm the managing director of Belmont Sandwax Care Group. So we are a care provider in Kent. Mm-hmm. You know, we offer services for dementia, Alzheimer's, Huntington's, Parkinson's, very much a lot more now. We have day centre services, home care services, and a series of care homes in Kent, East Sussex, and soon to be other counties.
Wow. Which expansion plans.
Stuff. Yes, yes. Yeah. It's going, you know, working hard on that. So yeah. It's been really
good. Because it's interesting, because you live in Birmingham.
Yes. As comes up very regularly. But it's not everyone thinks we're in Sandbanks in Bournemouth, which is the biggest problem, because Sandbanks is in
I
the name.
That so. When I saw it, I thought, odd.
Yeah. Yes, it was the, you know, the company name that we picked up when we bought the company, but we are rebranding in October to Belmont Healthcare Group.
How are you?
So just to dispel any of that sort of thing, we're going to be rebranding at October time.
See, I thought you were going to say we're going to open a home in Hampshire.
No, not in Hampshire. It's a bit too far.
Yeah, but it would have been Sandbanks.
Yeah, indeed. But that's one of the things. It's about trying to keep these your units together, because you can be a lot more collaborative.
Yeah, sure.
Probably too dispersed.
So how many units do you have now?
So three care homes, one daycare service, and our domiciliary service, which is more of a support-led service. So we mainly concentrate on rehabilitation, hospital step-down, supporting people to go back home. Mm. So we don't tend to contract. It's more about if people wish to come into our services for respite. Yeah. We will also help at home, domestic services, gardening, all sorts of things like that. So it's a plethora. So rather than it being about this is care, this is what you do, you have to be in a care home, or you have to be looked after at home. We kind of say, well, what's best for you and your family, and how does it work? And it might be you come to us for a short period or a longer period. So that is my main sort of function. And then obviously I support the sector within Kent. So I'm the vice chair of the Kent Integrated Care Alliance. Right. So we support over 200 providers in
so
Kent.
So that's kind of like a trade body, as
it's exactly the same. Yeah, we found that it was Kent. Care in Kent kind of got forgotten in a lot of the sort of, you know, the chambers and things like that, just because the industry was quite dispersed.
Yeah.
So 4 years ago, we decided to bring a lot of these providers together. So we now have a very strong unit. We support about 80% of the providers in Kent, mainly sort of medium to small enterprises, the sort of big boys. We don't tend to have too much involvement. It's more about lobbying and re-education, and we do a lot of social media stuff, marketing stuff, selling stuff to try and help people realise that actually you need to sell your care business. People aren't just going to knock on your door anymore. Yeah. So we do a lot of engagement stuff like that.
Okay.
How have you seen things changing? I mentioned to you I'm a trustee at Age UK, and we were talking about the sort of profile of our customers, what they're actually purchasing from us in terms of whether it's the day services or actual activities or the meals or whatever, is actually changing quite noticeably because of the way that society's changing.
Well, absolutely. I think you find that because of multi-generational families, you've got a lot of people spending a lot more time together than I would say that we used to. You also got a lot more people are getting older, essentially, and people are needing more support. So we find that there was a history of care homes being care homes and domiciliary services being domiciliary services, and or home care services, if you didn't know what domiciliary services were. But the issue is I think that not more needs need to come together, so a lot more unity within the services. It's what we found. You know, when I took over the business in 2011, I didn't come from a care background. It was just a family was in care. I came from a sales background in telecoms, so completely different background.
Right.
But then to see what was happening from sort of helicopter view, you could see that there was people were told that that's what you have to do if you've got to make a decision on care. But because the family are more educated now, you know, access to a lot more information, is that the decisions are being made by, you know, people in their 30s, people in their 40s, not by people in their 70s and 80s. So there's a whole wide range of selection that people have to make. So it's actually, well, what do I want to do with my care? Help people understand more about what care is, because it just gets a bad press. And all the good stuff doesn't get in the national media, because nobody, sadly, nobody cares.
Yeah, good news is boring, isn't it?
All that's of the good news is in the industry press. You know, we're heavily involved in the industry press. I write a lot of articles myself, and I'm always strongly trying to get that message out into the wider reach, because to change the perception is really important, because that impacts on your recruitment, it impacts on your retention, it impacts on being able to sell the idea of your family members going into care, because we are still got to sell that. We have still got to sell that idea to why you'd want
them to get care. And it's a positive opportunity for people in most cases, as opposed to last resort and nothing else you can do.
It can be life-changing.
Positive for everybody, not just the individual, but the families and everything. Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's really important with the wave of care businesses that's happening now. You are seeing a huge step change, which is essentially what we do, is we offer multiple forms of care. You know, just down to the fact that if somebody needs a lift, we'll take a minibus and we'll take them to the shops. You know, we won't, that's it. We won't let all people just come along to some of our day centre activities. We, you know, we are opening the first dementia focused cinema in New Romney, which opens at the end of this month, fingers crossed. But so that will be a lot more engagement for people in the local community. So we're utilising space within our day centre because we've seen a huge drop in the contracting from the local authority with wanting to deal with day centre services. So we find that it's a lot more drop-in and a lot more people having to pay for themselves. So yeah. rather than charging, we're using it as more of a community space. Yeah. So we're putting this cinema functionality in so people could come, and we're going to be showing sort of golf events and football events and things. We've got this huge 3-metre by 1.8-metre screen out by the seafront in New Romney. So, you know, we'll be tweeting and getting a lot on our Facebook page about that when it goes live. But we've had a few technical hiccups. So it's taken, it was supposed to go live at the start of this month, but we've had to send a lot of the AV equipment back because it wasn't doing the quality for the imagery. So right. we've had to spend a lot more money on some better equipment. But it's things like that to try and engage people into why you want them to be in care and trying to dispel the stigma. You know, if anybody saw the Dispatches program last week, you know, when you see things like that, that impact has such a knock on, and we'll see that knock on for about 3 months now. We'll see where people are just, well, they won't refer anymore. Nobody will be, they won't search, they won't do any, you won't get any incoming phone calls and stuff. And then we have to rebuild that confidence in what we're here to do.
And there's so many levels of engagement that people need and you can offer. And again, there's a whole thing about, oh, I'm not old enough to do that, to need that. And actually, there's loads of things that people can have that you can help with. You know, lots of, you know, stuff, for want of a better word. But actually, people don't want to because, again, that stigma, as you said.
Well, I think it's dispelling the fact that it's a care home. I think, you know, we were called Belmont Sandbanks Care Homes for a long time, and I just got rid of the homes. And I changed all of the names of our buildings. They're just called lodges. Because the idea is trying to change the fact that people can come there to do any of our services or be involved in any of our services. And I'd say about 25% of our services are non-chargeable because really it's about people engaging with the community. And care businesses are becoming hubs of the community because actually if they begin to work in a certain way and people think about this, you know, more long-term, how amazing would it be if these care services were operating in such a way that if somebody who's over 65 who has an ailment or an illness or is at home alone and doesn't have companionship, instead of phoning 999 when they have a fall, they phone their local care business. And that care business isn't charging to do anything, but you're completely changing the process of how you deal with illness and ailment. Is that our 999 is clogged up by things that maybe could be sorted by another business. But it's the fact that people are allowing private businesses to take over from what is seen as the NHS. But actually, it's changing the mindset of people to say, we can become that sort of fourth line of support. If somebody phones us, we will go out and see if they're okay. And that might stop an ambulance call. If you times that by 20,000 care homes across the UK, and that's one per week, just one per week, that's 20,000 phone calls to 999 that you wouldn't get. How much of an impact would that have? But then that's the saving on the NHS. And then you don't have to start talking about care fees because that saving can fund those issues. And I think it's really, that's the conversations that we should be having.
Sure, absolutely.
And that's what I'm really passionate about.
Anyway. Yeah, absolutely. and you know, because you know my background, and we've talked about this as well, Adam. About the skills shortages within the care sector. Health and care is the fastest growing sector in the Western world in terms of employment. And it's one of the hardest, is it not?
It's really tough. I mean, it goes into sort of why I'm got involved in the sector. You know, I came from a telecoms call centre background, so I'm used to that sort of attrition and retention of staff and constant recruitment. So there's real synergies with the healthcare sector. But it's also about making sure that you have the engagement with people to want to work for you. Because if you've got, like I said, going back to that Dispatches programme, you watch that, what's going to make you want to work in the sector when you know that it is a, you know, not a high-paid industry for certain roles? So it's creating that new image of what the sector is about and trying to engage people more. I mean, last year I started the first ever Kent Care Awards, which was all focused on individuals who work within no business awards, no sort of best business, best employer. It was all chef of the year, ancillary worker of the year, you know. And we had our first one last year, and we had 245 people at the Ramada in Dover. We had only 12 awards, you know, non-profit making, really low price table, and it was absolutely amazing. We've had loads of positivity around that. We're doing our second annual awards this year, which will be on the 29th of September at the Leascliffe Hall in Folkestone. So care businesses out there, you know, who don't know about it, you know, please do engage with it, because it's a really great way to promote your staff and get some engagement around it. And I think that's really important. And those types of things are how we're trying to change the way in which the sector thinks and the way in which public perceive working in the sector. Because it's our job.
That's the crucial thing, isn't it? Is this whole perception thing. Mm. And like you say, programmes like dispatches don't help. But there is a general perception anyway about, you know, it being a bottom wiping job and all that kind of stuff. And that's one of the hardest things to overcome. But I mean, nowadays especially, there's apprenticeships, there's vocational training. There are, in fact, qualifications that are mandatory to work in your sector. Is that not true?
Yeah, there is. And I think giving people that development path. I think one of the things that we're really proud of is that all of our registered managers, which I think is one of the hardest jobs in the UK because not only are you managing a care home, the regulation that you have, the staff interaction, the recruitment, the retention, the finance element, it's huge. Mm-hmm. But all three of our care homes, all of our managers have come from within. And two of them have gone through our development programme, and two of them, when I came in 2011 with carers, and now they're registered managers, full-blown QCF level 5, I think it was what it was called, and leadership management award that they have to have to be able to do it, go through the interviews and the relevant processes.
And they're well-paid jobs as well, aren't they?
Yeah, they are becoming. Yeah. And I think that it's really important is a lot of care businesses like we do have now started implementing bonus schemes, and that's really enticing people. So I come from building bonus schemes into people's pay. So that's one of the things that we implement, is that we have bonus schemes based on budget control, based on retention and recruitment, based on their CQC. And, you know, if they achieve certain levels on the CQC, which is the Care Quality Commission, for those that don't know, we're regulated by them every year. If they get certain levels on that, and that has really helped people go, okay, there is more to this, and there's more that I can go towards to be able to have a strong understanding of the industry. But it is a difficult one to retain people in.
Absolutely.
But yeah.
Cool. I know you're very passionate about the business that you're in, and you're a leading player in the trade association representing care and trying to push the whole care sector forward. Just as an aside, are you familiar with the KCC guilds? Have you been involved with that at all?
No, we've had some recent engagement as a trade association to try and become part of those conversations. Okay. And I believe we have some meetings coming up. We meet with KCC at least once a month.
Yeah, sure.
There's a meeting going on now, one today. Our trade association meeting bumped in with this, but obviously there's plenty of us on the board to be able to share that. So we try and build that engagement, but there has always been that line between sort of local authority and private business. And I think that anybody who sort of plays in that field, whatever it is, where you contract with the local authority, it can be challenging, especially when money comes into conversations. But it's trying to get away from that. You have to create a business model that works for people to want to work with you. Yeah. And I think I always use the field of dreams analogy. Yeah. You know, you have to build something and people will come to it. You know, you can't just expect people to go, this is it, and we'll give me the money and then I might do something about it.
It's odd, isn't it? This local authority thing. Sometimes bizarre things can happen, and you think, you know, there's nothing joined up here. I am a senior executive of a small charity, which I do on a voluntary basis, and we're a tiny, tiny charity, Kent Deaf Children's Society, and we look after something like 1,800 deaf kids in the UK, and we had a local authority budget of 15k a year to look after 1,800 kids. Okay, so we weren't exactly wealthy. And we were called to a meeting at County Hall where they cut our budget in half. And it was all, you know, well, austerity, you know, budget cuts, yada, 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 yada. Come away feeling very sad. Went back to my own office, my own business. And I get there and I've got an email from KCC. It says, hello, mate, would you like to borrow £100,000 interest-free? And I run a multi-million pound business. And I'm going, hold on a minute. You just cut £7,000 off my budget for that. And now you're offering me £100,000 interest-free. Why didn't you offer, you know... But, of course, different department, different thing, different issue and all the rest of it. And that's the thing that people find so hard to deal with, isn't it? Is that when you talk about funding for anything, you know, I saw somebody yesterday talking about funding, you know, the response to the Grenfell Tower fire residents versus, you know, the political fixing that went on to establish the government, and, you know, and then people going, oh, you can always find money if you want it. Interesting, but not a lot we can do about it.
The comment that you made there about you can always find money if you want it is really interesting, because there is a real... one of the biggest issues is in the care sector is that you've got a local authority funded stream, a privately funded stream, and then you have the NHS.
Yeah.
And there has to be a level of understanding across society to know that not all care is free.
Yeah.
The NHS is free, and that was, you know, when it was set up for purpose, it had its purpose. But there has to be a reason that, as the country expands and illnesses expands and people live longer, there has to be changes to that. Yeah. But there is also enough money going around, but it's just the proportion of how that is spent. When I go back to what I talked about, imagine if one call per week wasn't made to 999, but it was picked up by 20,000 care homes. That's 20,000 calls to 999. Yeah. You instantly, that is huge. And that's one phone call.
Yeah.
And it's those types of conversations when people just be a little bit more open, a little bit more expressive, a little bit more collaborative on, you know, on the other side of the fence. NHS and social services start talking together more across the country, we will see huge differences. I'm just hopeful that one day that is going to happen. It just seems to be further and further afield, though.
Our children are a lot more collaborative than we ever were. So hopefully, as you say, for me, that's how things are moving forward. It's collaboration everywhere, wherever you look. And 100%. Hopefully that difference in how they are will start to have that impact.
For me, and this is being a little bit political energy, but for me, the issue is you've got to be more local. We try to do everything on a centralised basis where one size fits all. It just doesn't work. It's never worked. It never will work, and it certainly won't work in the 21st century. You've got to do it bottom up. You've got to attack things at the root, not from on high. Yeah. And politicians are gradually learning this lesson where they get their heads kicked in because they make a policy, and then half the people go, "You can't do that," because you know, and they just haven't thought through the ramifications of it. And the problem is, and it's a bit like you identified, Adam, when something horrible happens, that becomes the story, you know, and you only need one incident. There could be a million good incidents, but one bad incident and it's bang and it's blown up and then everybody panics and, you know, it all kind of goes off.
And there are some...
you get to the reality, it becomes a tick box exercise to achieve what you need to do. Actually, it's nothing to do with tick box. It's got to be a living, breathing thing of what you do every single day. And that's community care.
Exactly,
falls into that. So rolling high with tick box just won't work.
Yeah. No. And it hasn't for too long. So,
Adam, I want to move on now because I heard a little rumour that you've written a book.
I did.
Yes. And I want to find out about this book. So tell us all about it.
Again, it was, I think I posted about it a few last week, I think, and I said there was no real rhyme or reason. I write a lot of articles for industry press, and I've written blogs over the years about various things. And somebody said to me once, "Why don't you write a book?" And I was like, okay. Well, I've got no real... I'm not doing it to sell my business. I'm not doing it to sort of promote anything specific. So in between sort of train journeys, back and forth to Birmingham, and on holiday and things like that, I pulled together lots of things that I'd experienced and tried to turn it into a book or a semblance of a book. And, it's published tomorrow, 28th of June, comes out... through Merio Books and Memoirs Publishing, which it will be available through them tomorrow. And we're going to be doing some, it'll be on Amazon, but we're going to be doing some offers and some things on Amazon over the next sort of month or so. But it was something that I've been passionate about, which you've probably heard with me talking today. You know, I'm very passionate about people who work in business. Just because I was a pretty high level sales director and a sales manager in the telecoms industry. And the whole reason I left was because I felt like I was under the cosh to deliver all the time and, you know, working 7 till 7 every day and, you know, ruins friendship relationships and business relationships. And you just, you know, and I always thought to myself, why is it like this? And the book is just written kind of from the heart, really, about where I've had issues. And I made this decision in 2010 that whenever I go to bed on a Sunday night, I want to get up on a Monday morning. And that's kind of really what it's about. It's about how do I make my employees feel? What type of culture do we inherit and what type of businesses do we present out on the world to say to people, come and work for us? You know, how do we have sort of benefits programs, or do we have sort of peer groups and support for if anyone has any issues? And then it's just taken examples of American companies and companies that I know, specifically some amazing companies in Kent, very much so. I find Kent's got an amazing, vibrant sort of business community.
Absolutely.
They do some stunning things to attract people. So that I wouldn't say there's anything amazingly new in there. It's kind of just bringing things together. And those people that have read it have said that they found it quite interesting. And I used to use this sort of clear picture of when I used to recruit people in sales about, I used to call it the green line of joy and the black line of doom. And it was kind of like, why would you want to work for somebody where you're sat on the black line of doom, which is you're basically fed by fear. You come into work because you're fed by fear, because I have to be there because somebody's going to shout at me. And the sort of introduction to the book is actually me from my head talking about a daily experience. And it actually starts with the tone. If you, when you read it, people will go, what does these da-da-da-da mean? It's, if you do it, sing it out in your head, it's the Apple alarm tone on your phone, because it was the thing that I used to dread of that going off in the morning, knowing that I have to get up and go in to see this chap that I called the Viking. He was my managing director of a company, and he just it didn't matter what I did. It was just, you know, we might have been ahead on sales, but it didn't matter what I did. It just made life really uncomfortable. And it's just very much trying to be more accessible to your teams. And I'm a big fan of the TV show called The Big Bang Theory. So hence why a lot of my chapter names are kind of a bit obscure and a bit long. And the book is called Risk versus Reward.
I was about
Reward.
To say, what's it called?
Yeah, it's called Risk versus Reward, the employee-employer conundrum.
Right.
And it was very much just because there's loads of businesses out there, especially young entrepreneurial businesses that are following pretty much everything that I talk about. But I've still found from my consultancy work that I've done in the past, and you still see it far too much where you speak to people who I physically employ from other businesses, where we ask them, one of our key questions is, so why do you want to come and join us? Because we want to understand. Or why did you leave the last role? Because actually we want to make sure that we don't do that again. And there's still, these mistakes are still happening.
That's
one of the reasons why I asked the question to Audrey earlier, because obviously my past experience was very much that, is that you were pushing. So that's really what it's about.
Well, I'm really looking forward to reading it. I think it's going to be good.
I brought you a copy.
Yeah.
It's not. It's because it goes to print properly tomorrow. So okay. It's a proof copy, but I thought I'd give you one.
Allowing
me to plug it.
I'm really looking forward to reading it. I love things like that because it's from the heart. And it's realistic. It's real. You're not trying to sell something in terms of a format for something. You're talking about something that you're passionate about and your experiences. And I guess, I haven't read the book yet, obviously, but I'm kind of guessing because I know you a little bit. It's going to be a no holds bar just view of how you feel about things and how you see things. And I kind of like that.
Yeah, myself and things that I've seen other people do,
exactly.
Like the experiences. Yeah. Some of it's got some large corporate bits. There's a section where I talk about some of culture around Netflix because they've got an amazing internal culture and about how you can sort of think to adapt. Some just snippets because you can never copy what people do. You have to do your own thing. And I just got into this flow of writing it. But it was kind of in between, so it was very. So it's over about 18 months, 2 years of me sort of writing paragraphs onto an MS Word document and then
just sort of
put it out there. But it's the key is to try and hopefully people will engage with it. Obviously, those people who've seen on Twitter, at Belmont Sandbank is our care business, but I'm at Adam Hutchison 80. The stuff about the book will be going out on that Twitter handle. So, you know.
So give us that Twitter handle again.
At Adam Hutchison 80. Right. With no N in it's Hutchison, not Hutchinson. It's just that usually becomes the thing, you know. Is it Hutchinson comes on?
I'll just check. I have spelt it right.
At Adam Hutchison 80, and we'll be doing some bits and bobs around the book. But like I said, it's available, published tomorrow, so people should be able to pick it up. But we're doing some sort of Amazon offers over the next few weeks about it, so keep an eye out for those if you don't want to pay full price.
Tweet me in it, tag me in the tweet, and we'll share that and we'll get to it. For the moment, Adam Hutchison, without an N. Thank you so
thanks
much.
Thanks for your time, Paul. Really appreciate
it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you, as always, and we love having you on the show, and you're welcome all the time. Thank you, Adam, so much.
Cool. Can I have one last line? And the only thing is, it's just because I've just become become a board of trustee members for the Care Workers Charity, which is a benevolent fund for pushing people in the care workers in the industry, really support those who work in the industry. Yeah. So please, anybody that works in the industry, has any issues in the industry, we support you financially with all sorts of things. www.careworkerscharity.org.uk. Go on there, get involved. You can apply for funding and all sorts of stuff.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Thank you for that, Adam. No, that's fantastic. And I want to talk to you sometime about your awards thing as well, because I think that's really interesting too. Yeah. Brilliant. We're going to talk to Andy in a minute. I've just got a couple of emails that I want to cover before we talk to Andy. There's an event coming up, the Networkers Networking event. Now, this is the second running. The first event was absolutely brilliant, and I really recommend you go along to the second one. This one is set in the stunning location of Brands Hatch Place at Fulcombe, and we're looking forward to welcoming you to the second event of its type, and it's taking place on Thursday the 6th of July from 9:30 a.m. to 3:30. There's four great speakers, each sharing valuable information and tips on how to make your networking effective and efficient. There's lots of the best networking masterminded and support associations in Kent are going to be there, and many like-minded business owners to network with in a very relaxed setting. The Networking Networkers event is suitable for you if you've just started networking or are unsure where to go or how to do it effectively. If you're already in a network but are frustrated because it's not working for you, or you're a serial networker, that will be me then, who loves networking and don't want to miss a great opportunity. The speakers on the day are Mark Lemesma, a keynote speaker sharing his knowledge as a communication skills coach, helping attendees to perfect their pitch and understand the mindset of effective networking. Glenys Chatterley, who's the managing director of the Effective Business Network, and she'll be sharing Networking 101. Phil Wilson. Phil's brilliant. Phil did a talk at Grow Kent, which was absolutely fabulous. Phil Wilson, owner of Inspirational Rhythms, he'll be sharing his small steps to building your business and how networking helps. And Sasha Mulligan, who's a speaker, educator, author and entrepreneur, and she'll be talking about the importance of mindset and energy. If you'd like to book your tickets in advance, it's £15 to attend the event with refreshment but no lunch. Or it's £25 to attend the event with refreshments and a buffet lunch if you book in advance. If you pay on the day, then attendance with no lunch is £20 and attendance with lunch is £30. So pay beforehand for the attendance and lunch is £25, or just attendance is £15. And you can book all of that by going to butterfliesbusinessevents.co.uk/NNE. Cool.
Lovely. Shall I do
One quick one, and then we're going to talk to Andy.
Yeah, ZT Social Media, a course, Developing Your Business Online, on the 29th of June or the 19th of July at the Medway Innovation Centre. This is how you'll learn how to take your business online and start getting in front of your target audience on the right channels. So if you go to zcsocialmedia.com, you can find out more.
Fantastic. It's now a pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show our third guest of the day, Mr. Andy Stiles. Andy is from Risk Evolves and other things. You've got quite a portfolio going there, Andy.
You're trying to, definitely. Yeah. Thank you for the invite.
It's interesting, actually, that it turned out that we had three salespeople here.
Yeah.
Completely unknown to me. I didn't realise you two had a background in sales.
Sales conference.
Yeah. We felt a bit intimidated, really, didn't we, Joe?
Yeah.
All these salespeople.
Especially when they started selling to us.
Yeah.
We bought loads.
We bought all kinds of stuff. Yeah. I got stuff coming out of my ears now.
Anyway. I promise I won't be here to sell. I mean, as I said, for Risk Evolves, in terms of what we do, it's a risk consultancy. It's a business that helps business think, manage and protect against risk.
Okay.
And just listening today around the conversations, it's cropped up so many times, and there's me thinking, no one wants to talk about risk. It's not a sexy subject. It's not something people want to talk about. But actually, we've mentioned it in so many different guises today.
Exactly, yeah.
We had the brand risk with Morrisons. There's a branding issue in there somewhere. It could be a risk issue that needs managing. We've had the will risk mentioned about, you know, not having a will in place and the consequences.
Yeah.
We've had Joe and all your planning. I've heard about all your planning.
She's well risky with that, I tell you.
he doesn't have a plan, plans to fail. It's a long-tested phrase. Audrey, sales risk with people getting lethargic or lazy in what they do. Yeah. Everything we've been talking about is around risk. So
the whole of business is about risk, isn't it? And it's about risk analysis. Give us a view from your point of view, Andy, of an overview, if you can,
of what you really mean by managing risk.
What does it mean if you can? I'm sure you can.
Yeah. If we go back a step,
hold on a second. Can we start off with managing her, please? Because she's getting well risky now. Or is it frisky?
I can't remember. Are we supposed to be nice to our guests? We assume that you can, because this is what you do.
No.
I think I can, yes. But if you just rewind back a step and listening to Adam in his change of career around the black line. You know, I was working in a corporate and was doing a role that was pretty much target driven, and it was quite challenging. But when you're in that kind of environment, what you don't do is help businesses. You don't actually offer a lot of advice to businesses. And when I left that world, my whole remit was around helping businesses. And that's me fundamentally. I like helping people, whether it's through the governor that I do join. I've just joined the Lee Academy mentoring scheme to mentor students. I like helping people. I like helping businesses. So actually getting involved in the business world is, you've got lots of consultants out there that are doing some fabulous work around business consultancy to help you grow, business consultancy to help you or coach you in what you do, whether it be sales or other bits and pieces. But actually, all businesses at the heart of them have risk, and no one's really helping a business think and talk about those risks. So that's really where I got involved with this. And Risk Evolves is a company that's made up of corporate people like myself that have come from a big background of regulation and policies and process. But actually, what's at our heart is actually helping those businesses look and think about the things that they don't see on a day-to-day basis that we know are going to cause them problems. So the kind of risks we're talking about, we're not big into health and safety. It is an issue, but pretty much we will look at the way a business works and what they do from A to B, and look at the risks that they have on a day-to-day basis in the way they do that.
And when you say risk, and this is the question I was trying to ask before she started on me. Yeah. You talk about risk, and people think about, you know, like gambling, for instance, is a risk. You know, you put up money and you lose it or you don't lose it. But for me, there are different types of risks and different ways that you approach this. So from a strategic business level, there's a risk in business, and that risk could be that without the right strategy, you get left behind, you're excluded from a market, or you don't develop into a market, or competition takes you out of the market. That there's that kind of level of risk. Yeah. Yep. And there's risk of what I call the stupid type, where you expose yourself, you know, so if you see what I mean, you know, so basically you haven't followed some procedures, or you put the wrong kind of cladding on a building or something, you've exposed yourself to a technical risk. So I kind of try to separate those two things.
We touch on both.
Right.
Our main areas around governance,
right,
policy and process. So we're
right,
looking
okay
at the way a business operates to put some structure in it, because prevention is better than cure. And
sure,
often we're approached by businesses where they've had a problem and it's pretty chaotic. It's costly, it's time consuming and very stressful. So what we try to do is get the business to think about those things before they happen.
Yeah.
So they've got an action plan in place, so everybody in the business knows what to do. And the areas that consume most of our time and energy at the moment are cyber risk. I've heard many speakers come on here, like Jackie Offen from JJ Systems, around all of the cyber crime that's out there.
Yeah.
It's in the UK in particular, it's rife. It's escalating, it's getting bigger, the amount of money being lost is getting bigger.
Yeah.
And still businesses probably take a view that it won't happen to me, it's not that important. So what we're trying to do is actually sit down and say, well, let's have a look at what you do and the kind of exposures you've got in order that we can help you think about and plan for it. And then we can take it to another level by offering accreditations. We will do things like Cyber Essentials. We will do something called NIASME standard, which is a new one. We will do ISO standards. So it really is putting structures and plans in place to help those businesses.
Yeah.
The other area that is massively consuming our time is data protection legislation in the UK changes next year.
Which is about to change, with the general data protection rules,
So GDPR is a big area that, in all of the risks that we're trying to help with, it's probably lack of awareness or lack of understanding of what it means to me and my business. So we're genuinely just trying to say, well, don't ignore it, because there could be consequences of that. You actually need to understand.
This is one of the problems that you see quite a lot with small businesses and micro businesses. There's this tendency to hear about something and go, well, nah, it doesn't affect me. And the reality is that people say that because they go, I don't even want to understand this. No, I just don't want to know. So I'm going to pretend it doesn't affect me. But of course it does.
I mentioned about tick box exercises earlier on. Often board owners will take a tick box mentality. They'll delegate something and they think they're covered. Actually, it's still, it has to be what you live and breathe every single day to make sure you're protected. Yeah. And data protection is definitely one of those areas. Mm. And the level of change that's coming will impact a lot more businesses than they genuinely believe. Mm. I mean, I was talking to a business owner the other day. He said, I don't take any personal data, which I doubted, but they claim not to take any personal data other than they've got their employee records. So they've got all their staff records, which is all outsourced to an HR provider that also does their payroll. Well, under the definition of data, they are a data controller, and under the legislation, they do have a liability or some consequences that could come at them if they don't manage it. So a lot of businesses make assumptions around things like risk or cyber risk or GDPR and data protection that generally you need to unpick it and just make them think, what does it really mean for me? And it is different for virtually every business you talk to.
Absolutely. I want to kind of focus a little bit because it's something that really interests me a lot, which is strategic, what I would call market risk. Yeah. So where am I positioned in a marketplace? What are the, in the old days, you used to do SWOT analysis, you know, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and all that nonsense. Is that something that you guys get involved in helping organisations to plot the medium to long term in their business strategies?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't claim we are specialists in helping people, in helping a business grow, but you'll remember from an event I saw you back in Tenterden, where I spoke about cogs, and we take the view that a business is a series of cogs, and for a business to thrive, succeed and perform, all those cogs need to continue turning, and if one of those cogs starts to malfunction or goes wrong, it has serious consequences for the business. So where you've got a business that's looking to grow, for example, is that there's a number of cogs that are going to go on when you start. You might say that's direct selling, you're going to improve your conversion. Actually, if you suddenly take your business and you're growing it by 20-30%, actually, what else does that impact within the business? You know, have you got the resource yourself to be, have you got the people on site already to do what you do? Is the site and premises big enough? Can your suppliers cope with what you need to do? At the moment, the way you structure, the way what you do, it's all down to you. You're now going to start delegating. So whilst we don't look at that in answer to your question, Paul, specifically, we are looking at the consequences or what would happen to a business if they go on that journey, and we will talk to them about that kind of journey.
Right, okay, cool. That's really good. Now, I happen to know that you kind of have a portfolio of things you do. Do you want to just kind of touch on something? Because you mentioned yourself earlier that you're an associate of Athelbrey.
I think from my days working for a corporate, I worked in a number of different areas. I was a trainer, I was a coach.
Right.
So I work with Athelbrey, and because of my background in banking, I work on financial courses,
right,
and hopefully increasingly on GDPR data protection, because we need to raise the awareness. So I'm a coach. I've also got my own company called Fixer Consultancy, which is around, I mentioned about me and how I like to help people. This is, I will go out and specifically work on a project for risk of roles and identifying some leadership issues or something that business has got, so I can then go down a coaching mode and work out on that basis as well. So I suppose you could say I'm a jack of all trades, but a master of none.
Portfolio is much posher.
It's a portfolio worker. It's a portfolio worker, Andy. Stick with that. You know.
I like that. But yeah, no. So. But at the moment, as I said, we are being predominantly all my time is pretty much on risk of roles and trying to raise awareness around data protection.
And how coming back to that risk thing, how are you finding that? How are you finding businesses reacting to your sales proposition? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can imagine it's another one of those things. We've talked about this quite a lot. Everything from will writing upwards, you know, what I call insurance-based services, whether they're strictly insurance or risk or you know, covering all your bases. The problem with them is people always put them off until it's too late. You know, that's the problem. So kind of one of the questions I wanted to ask you is, what proportion of your customers are you dealing with where you're, I'm trying to put this delicately, sorting out the ramifications of having not planned for the risk and then, you know, risk a damage limitation, if you like?
I think the majority of businesses still aren't even aware
that
the legislation is changing.
Yeah.
There's some understanding, because it's EU legislation, that when we exit or we Brexit, it won't apply to us, but it definitely will.
Yeah.
So the majority of businesses are still on this learning journey, and we've got less than 12 months of businesses actually to be ready for it.
Yeah.
I was with a firm of solicitors on Thursday, and they are already beginning to talk to their clients around what it means for their clients. And the biggest challenge they had is they've now done a brilliant job at raising the awareness of clients, but actually they now need someone to effectively project manage it. So I can gladly put my hand up and say, yes, we'll come in and do that for you. But now I think the majority of businesses still don't recognise they've got a responsibility in what they need to do. And then you look at it on the other side, because for me, all of us sitting in the room here and those listening, we're all people that give our personal data out freely, and we don't really think about why we're giving that data, and more importantly, what the company is going to do with it.
Yeah.
The new legislation makes it quite clear that you need to tell me what you're going to do with my data.
Absolutely.
So it's a good thing for me personally, because it puts me in control. But when you look at what some businesses are doing and or not doing, or what should they should be doing, there's some businesses that unfortunately will get caught out, so they do need to do something.
Absolutely, yeah.
I haven't got a book. I feel like I'm.
Come on, Andy, get on with it. Write a book, mate.
But something that we're looking to do at Risk Evolves at the moment, which may be of interest to the listeners, is to raise the awareness. We're going to set up a 6-modular or something like that training program to talk about. Actually, what do you need to do on this part of the legislation? What do you need to do on this?
And that I think that's a really good idea. I think that's a really good idea because, you know, as you've intimated all the way through this, it's difficult to get people to pay attention. Even though they know they need to pay attention, you go, oh, you know, it sounds expensive, it sounds complicated. You know what? I'll just stick my head under the desk and pretend it's going away. So I think that could be a good thing.
I've also got an event tomorrow as well, which is... If a lot of the webinars I've been on around GDPR tend to focus on Article 6.1 and what that means. It's all very technical. It's all very jargonistic. I've got a workshop tomorrow for small businesses where I just say, what does this actually mean for me? What do you need to go away and think about? So if anyone is free at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning in Tunbridge at the old fire station, come and join us.
It's a great venue as well.
I'll gladly welcome you, yes.
Absolutely. 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, manana, at the old fire station, Tunbridge. Be there.
And it is the 28th of June all day tomorrow as
well. Andy, sadly, we're kind of running out of time. We're fast approaching the end of the show. Thank you so much for that. Give us a shout for how people can find out more about what you do, like your website or Facebook page or Twitter handle.
The website is Risk Evolves.
Right.
You can contact me direct through email or through my LinkedIn profile. So my email is andy_styles@riskevolves.com. At Risk Evolves on Twitter. So predominantly my contact is through LinkedIn or Twitter or through the website.
Fantastic. On the Kent Business Radio website is a link to Andy's website as well, and that will be there forever, so you can always find it there. Okay. For the moment, Andy, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunk Show. Really interesting to talk to you. Thank you so much. I'm sorry we're fast running out of time. We've got loads of stuff to cover, so we're going to go straight into the FSB news.
Channel Radio News Update.
Huge congratulations to Mr. Mike Cherry, of head of policy at the FSB, who was awarded an OBE in this year's Queen's Honours List. So massive congratulations to Mike.
So women's networking event in association with 10 to 2 at King's Head in 2 Western Road, Bessels Green, Sevenoaks, Thursday the 13th of July from 9:30 to 11:30.
Fantastic. There's free English qualification programme being offered by Charlton Athletic Football Club. Charlton Athletic Community Trust has been given European social funding to deliver English in the workplace in a bid to upskill the workforce. If you're interested in this opportunity for your staff, please contact Guy Robinson, who's the Employment Development Officer at KCC. And his email address is guy.robinson@kent.gov.uk.
Hashtag FSB Connect Ashford. That's Wednesday the 5th of July from 10:30 to 12:30 at the Farrier's Arms on Church Road in Ashford. And if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/category/FSB, you can find out more and book.
Fantastic. I think you've also got one about Wilmington there.
I have, yeah. Ready to pass on your business advice? Could you inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs? Perhaps you've thought about hiring an apprentice, but are not sure if young people have the skills you need for business. Get involved now if you have the chance. This fourth FSB Skills 3030 event will give you the chance to forge strong links with a local school, share your experience of running a business and meet potential young employees. While students take part in workshops, business owners find out about hiring an apprentice and the new Kent County Council Guild Initiative. And then both groups meet together for facilitated speed networking. So who should come? Business owners, business managers, employers, HR managers and recruitment company owners. It's at Wilmington Academy in Wilmington, Dartford on Friday. That's this Friday from 10 till 1. And it's kentbusinessradio.co.uk/Wilmington. Sorry.
Thank you. That brings us to the end of our news update.
Channel Radio News Update.
Well, we're right at the end of another show. It's gone really quickly, hasn't it?
I just need to tell you
What's coming up later on Channel Radio. At 4 o'clock, we have the lovely Natalie Bonet with the Kent Creative Live Show. She has artists Emily Tull, Susan Churchill, Lisa Parkinson and Zoe Hinks on today's show. That's 4 p.m. here on Channel Radio with the Kent Creative Live Show with the lovely Natalie Bonet. At 5 o'clock, we're joined by the ladies' favourite, Mr. Craig Avery, he of the stripy socks and the far too small shorts.
Lovely picture in my opinion. There.
That's not a vision that you want, is it? Craig is on from 5 till 7 with a celebrity interview and music show. And then at 7 o'clock, we have Mr. Joey Whaler with a rockabilly show. At 9 o'clock, we have I Was Lord Kitchener's Valet, a show focused on the music from the 1960s. And then, as always, on Channel Radio, we finish off on Tuesday night with...
It's Club Culture with Boy George.
1, 2, 3, get down!
Cool drum beat at the squidgy bass, I give you Vanilla Ace, and it rhymes. That means I'm right on time. Welcome to Club Culture, where I control my very own dance universe. 1 hour or more of grooving delectables for your disco pleasure. I'm Boy George.
It's 1 hour of delectable, delicious dance music. It's Club Culture with Boy George on Channel Radio.
So as always, on a Tuesday evening, we round up at 10 o'clock with the fabulous Mr. Boy George and the Club Culture show. Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker show once again. I'd like to say a massive thank you to my co-host, the famous Joe Dodds.
Thank you.
And our fabulous lineup of guests, the lovely Audrey Chapman from Love Selling Academy.
Thank you.
Mr. Adam Hutchinson, who's awfully lovely, yeah, from Belmont Sandbank. What's the new name, Belmont?
Belmont Healthcare Group is what it will be.
Belmont Healthcare Group to be, an author.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
Not till tomorrow.
Yeah.
But thanks very much for having me, Paul.
Absolute pleasure, Adam. No, it's always a pleasure.
It's published author tomorrow. You are an author because you have written the book.
You've written the book.
Okay, I'll take that then.
She's very picky. Don't argue with her. She's very picky.
I'm going to leave it. Yeah.
And a massive thank you to Mr. Andy Styles of Risk Evolves. Thank you so much.
Notebook Styles, yeah.
Yeah.
Forever to be known until you've done it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us, all of you. Thank you, the listeners, for your tweets, your emails, and for participating in the show. We will be back with another Business Bunker show next week. In the meantime, have a fabulous week. Bye for now.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.